Often, artists need legal help. Bob Etch was the personal lawyer and dear friend of the late Atlanta Symphony Music Director Robert Shaw. It didn't hurt that Mr. Etch himself is an accomplished pianist, opera expert, and lifelong music lover. Bob Etch has long been a great supporter of the Atlanta art scene, and today he'll take us back to what Atlanta's musical landscape was like before Robert Shaw arrived in 1967.
Well, going back a little bit, the two dominant figures were, of course, Henry Sopkin, who led our orchestra, which was emerging from being a community orchestra, really. They were good, but they were still emerging. The other great dominant figure was Hugh Hodson, who was the head of the music department in Athens and also the head of the music program as organist and master chorister or whatever at St. Luke's Church. But we didn't have many resources. The symphony played in the municipal auditorium, and that was quite an experience.
That was also used for wrestling matches.
Wrestling, yes, but wrestling matches, but also the circus performed there. So if you were sitting in the municipal auditorium, there was a lingering smell of the elephants. But even funnier to me was in this quiet moment during this Beethoven 7th or something like this, you could hear the toilet flush.
Not in the score.
And I'm not sure how Beethoven would have reacted, but that was the reality. And so we didn't have any facilities at all. And the other thing, there was just so little money. Atlanta is still a young city. I often tell people that, wealth accumulation of any dimension just did not occur in Atlanta, except, with certain families that were smart enough to get into Coke and a few of those other great companies. But there wasn't much money, and it started developing after World War II. So unlike cities in the North that had a great, base of people who were really interested in classical music, they got their infrastructure in place in the late 19th century when it didn't cost that much. Atlanta had to do all of that, basically, whether it was a symphony hall or a museum or private schools or X, Y, and Z, had to do that after World War II. And so consequently, money was really tight, for the arts. But it was emerging. So the landscape that Robert arrived in is Atlanta was just emerging to start getting serious about serious music.
But he had quite a national, even international, reputation. Were people here aware of that?
Yeah, absolutely. His recordings, of course, had made him world famous already. His tours for the State Department had received a lot of attention, and it was a big deal when they were toured in Russia and, in those places. And so it was really a terrific thing for Atlanta to get a truly world-famous musician and lots of excitement around that.
Shaw made some bold moves, which resulted in fallout with some of his board members. What was the outcome of that showdown?
Well, that was a honeymoon for a while. I don't know whether that was 2 or 3 years or whatever else, maybe slightly longer. But then he was always a great champion of contemporary music. So he decided that he would have a season that he would feature a combination of Brahms and Charles Ives.
Quite a contrast there.
Yes, but it was intentional. I mean, it was kind of, okay, for the people who want the traditional, we'll have a heavy dose of Brahms this year. But I think that our symphony, if we're going to grow and our audience is going to grow, then, we really ought to pay attention to a great composer like Charles Ives. Then the big dramatic event occurred when the executive committee of the symphony board, all very well-intentioned people, I'm sure, but they decided to fire Robert without consultation with the full board. And when that happened, it was a wake-up call to those who admired what Robert represented. And a fellow named Wash Falk, who is a symphony board member and into real estate, he took the lead. And I remember he bought, I think he paid $10,000 to buy a full page in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and to say, save Shaw or something like that. So the city, you know, rose up, bought the tickets. People mobilized, and the board then reversed the decision. And Robert, you know, who had been officially fired, was then saved and then remained here, of course, in 1988. And again, these people, they were firm supporters of the Atlanta Symphony. They just weren't, they didn't admire Robert, and they thought he was a choral conductor, but not, you know, an orchestral conductor who could really improve our symphony. The symphony was hurt for a 10-year period by these people who really wanted to get rid of him. And and it lasted at least 10 years.
Really?
And, you know, every board meeting, you know, seemed to center on, you know, some sort of Shaw-related dispute with his strong admirers speaking up. And then those who just think he was not the right man for the job. And then Robert, you know, was the symphony was growing, the reputation was growing. They were winning Grammys. Robert was getting all kinds of awards, and the symphony got better.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's, it's hard to take an orchestra that's kind of emerging from the community orchestra situation which is what he inherited. It was beyond that, but not much. And then to bring in the musicians over time, that you can build a really important institution. And that's what Robert did.
We're hearing from Bob Edge, Robert Shaw's personal lawyer and dear friend. We'll hear more from Mr. Edge in just a moment on City Lights. Robert Shaw did not share his contemporaries' desires for jet setting and glamour. And keep in mind, this was in an age where a notable conductor could make a small fortune guest conducting orchestras all around the world. Bob Edge was Shaw's close friend and personal lawyer, representing him in negotiating fees and contracts. I asked Mr. Edge about Shaw's attitude toward money.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a really driving force with him. When the battle was going on, he made it clear to me, he said, I will not get in a dispute about money. So no one would believe how little he was really paid. It was pitiful, but he said, I mean, he did have, you know, royalties coming in from all of those recordings, and he had many other opportunities. But making money was never his big thing. It was, you know, making the music that was his driving force. He never really had a manager that was aggressive on his behalf. And he was unbelievably generous. I know that Bob Wood, who was on the board here, a great Atlantan, got him to come to Brevard, Transylvania Music Camp, Brevard Music Center, in the summers for a week, and Robert didn't charge. And he would go to, he would have a former student or former someone who had sung in a chorus who was developing a program someplace in Idaho or whatever. And Robert would go out, you know, to help this person kind of strengthen his program by having a workshop for a week to help that person. And he did that all the time.
And free of charge.
And so, I mean, his generosity, you know, in helping others develop their chorus, their music programs, their summer camps, it was an extraordinary act of generosity that lasted his entire life, you know. Really, it was remarkable.
You and your wife also knew him as a close friend. How did Caroline Shaw influence Robert's life?
Well, I must say that one of the great things that happened to Robert was Caroline Shaw, his wife. They married in the early 70s. And what she did for Robert was she really stabilized his domestic, you know, situation. When he first came to Atlanta, he was still married. His family remained in Cleveland. And so, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on, you know, it was hard, you know. And it was Caroline, after Robert was divorced from his first wife, and he and Caroline married. And by the way, I must say, Robert, I'm unsure that Robert selected Caroline. I think there's a good chance she selected Robert. And what a happy event for both of them, because they had a spectacular, you know, marriage. And this stability, I mean, she created this really beautiful home setting for him. And as I recall, the tag on her car may have been something like slave. She liked to laugh about, you know, she gave up. She had been a very, very active civic person in the city. She was like the youngest president of the junior league or something. She was very much involved. When she married Robert, she had one item on her agenda, and that was Robert and his career and, you know, their family. And she was wonderful. But it was more than just taking care of the domestic scene. She really helped him professionally, because she knew the Atlanta landscape, you know, and the key players. And when he needed to appear at a certain function, which he was not crazy about doing so often, she would say, "Robert, you really need to do this." She was kind of, you know, quasi manager, and did some wonderful things.
After Robert Shaw's retirement from the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, he was busier than ever with other projects. As head of the Spivey Foundation, you were responsible for establishing Robert Shaw's relationship with Spivey Hall. How did that unfold?
Well, first of all, in a slightly different view, he ceased being the music director sometime in the early 80s, but he remained, you know, music director emeritus and some other conducting title. He continued to do a lot of work with the Atlanta Symphony, you know, after he ceased being the music director. And that opened up a lot of opportunities. The Spivey Foundation went to Robert and said, "Robert, if we gave you $100,000 a year for 3 years to do something at Spivey Hall, would you be interested?" And he said, "Yes." And then he decided it would be a choral program of some kind. And there were some remarkable concerts down there. Although Robert was a great, great champion of the amateur unpaid choir, he used the money, most of the money, to pay singers to come and participate in this Spivey project that lasted 3 years. And so, again, he could have kept all the money for himself and gotten volunteers. He didn't. He turned the money basically over to the, you know, over to the singers. So he had these remarkable concerts. I'll never get over the performance of the Rachmaninoff Vespers thing. But he also did the Schubert songs for male chorus. That recording came out of Spivey, and some other things. But they were very important, wonderful musical events on the Atlanta calendar, and I'll forever be grateful to him for having done that.
Bob Edge, this has been a marvelous journey into the life and legacy of Robert Shaw, and may I also thank you for all you do for the arts in our community. You are the standard bearer, and I thank you.
Thank you so much, Lois.